Good afternoon. I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO. The Juneau Assembly and Cruise Line agencies will hold a joint meeting tomorrow afternoon to discuss the cruise ship tourism season ahead. The hour-long meeting will begin at noon tomorrow at City Hall in the Assembly Chambers. It will include leaders from Cruise Line International Association Alaska and other industry representatives. Both Assembly members and industry leaders can ask and answer questions about the season, which kicked off last week. The meeting tomorrow is open for public to attend in person or online, but there won't be an opportunity to testify. Juneau's Visitor Industry Director Alex Pierce says it's a chance for residents to hear from the industry directly. Juneau residents who want to suggest specific topics for discussion can email the Assembly prior to the meeting. The meeting is informational only, and the Assembly will not be voting on anything. Industry leaders also met with Ketchikan's City Council for a joint public discussion this morning. And Alaska lawmakers yesterday failed to override Governor Mike Dunleavy's veto of a bill that would have provided a $1,000 boost to basic per-student funding for public schools. The combined vote was 33 to 27, well short of the 40 votes needed to override Dunleavy's veto. The governor vetoed the bill on Thursday, saying it didn't include policy changes and that the bill's $250 million price tag was too steep. On that second point, Chief Senate Budgeter Lyman Hoffman, a Bethel Democrat, says he reluctantly agreed. Hoffman acknowledged the need to boost funding for state schools, but he said the state can't afford it.
We need to take our heads out of the sand, look at the fiscal realities that we live in today, and do what the people have sent us down here to do, to balance this budget.
He called on lawmakers to pass a series of revenue measures that he said would allow the state to fund schools appropriately. The largely Democratic Senate majority has backed three bills that would roll back oil and gas tax credits and expand corporate income taxes. The head budgeter in the House, Democratic Anchorage Representative Andy Josephson, took issue with Hoffman's view.
I can't go to my constituents and say, this is just unaffordable, because it's not. It's just a question of will, that's all.
He said the bill would increase spending by roughly $80 million compared with this year. That's a small fraction of the nearly $3 billion that the state has in savings. But Senate Finance Committee co-chair Bert Stedman, a Republican from Sitka, said that wasn't prudent with oil prices and financial markets in turmoil.
The headwinds coming at the state over the next year or so look significant, more significant than they've ever looked in my 20 years here.
The top three sources of state revenue are investment earnings, oil taxes, and the federal government. And all of those are under pressure. Stedman says lawmakers should focus on passing a minimum $680 boost in long-term funding, same as the one-time funding schools got last year. Minority Republicans were largely silent on the floor, but echoed Stedman's budget concerns in a news conference after the vote. Governor Mike Dunleavy proposed a $560 boost in a bill he announced alongside the veto. And a lot has changed at the University of Alaska since President Trump's inauguration. After executive orders, the University of Alaska's Board of Regents directed its university leadership to remove mentions of diversity, equity, and inclusion to protect its federal funding. But the Trump administration still froze or canceled millions of dollars in federal funding. At the University of Alaska Southeast, Chancellor Aparna Palmer says she's trying to balance upholding the university's values with maintaining federal funding. Two of the campus's grants have been affected, but it's been able to restore or find other sources of funding for them. Palmer says she's focused on federal financial aid, which hasn't been touched yet.
My priority is to make sure that we do what it takes to preserve that federal student aid for our students. That would be a huge, huge percentage of students who would be affected.
She says about 40 to 50% of UAS students receive federal student aid. Palmer says students should continue to apply for aid. On top of funding, UAS is keeping an eye on its international students' immigration status. Elsewhere in the state, four University of Alaska Anchorage students have had their visas revoked. But Palmer says U.S. Immigration and Custom Enforcement officers haven't been on any U.S. campuses.
So far, none of their visas are being revoked, but we monitor the situation daily.
She says anyone who sees immigration enforcement officers on campus should report it immediately to the university so they can support and advocate for students. And the ocean off Utqiagvik is covered with ragged sea ice ridges in early April. Inupiaq whalers build trails across the blue and white terrain to access hunting sites along the lead edge. It's hard to imagine a better spot for studying sea ice. And that's why a group of indigenous knowledge holders and Western scientists gathered there earlier this month. The Alaska Desk's Alonia Nijin reports.
The Sikkimut Field School was a week-long event that brought 20 specialists to Utqiagvik. Some were scientists working with climate models or satellite data. Others were residents from various Arctic regions who have hands-on knowledge about when the ice is safe for travel. It was the first time this particular group has gathered to study ice in Alaska's Arctic. Erin Emily Thomas is a sea ice modeler who studies how ice interacts with the ocean and atmosphere. She says she was excited to observe the ice in person instead of through models or satellite imagery and learn from other experts.
Having everyone just sitting in the same room, exchanging the knowledge, figuring out where is the missing gap of information, what should we be looking at, what's the most critical thing to study next. I thought that was the most exciting part of the whole field school, actually.
Participants spend mornings in a classroom running models and looking at data. Afternoons were spent on actual ice, observing its features and learning to use instruments to measure it. It's important work, particularly as winter sea ice in the Arctic was at record low this year, according to University of Alaska Fairbanks research released earlier this month. Thomas says that sea ice affects the whole climate system, which makes observing it now crucial.
Maybe in the near future, there will be very little sea ice to go out on. So I think it's really important to study this now while we have the chance.
Savik Richard Glenn is an Inupiaq hunter, geologist, and a former executive at the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. He led some of the hands-on activities, including checking ice thickness, watching for changes, and looking at the way snow and ice interact.
The little pieces of evidence that give you an idea about safety, about how prone the ice might be to movement, either breaking off and floating away or ridging up and grounding itself into the seafloor and potentially changing or covering up the tracks of your trail.
Glenn said that participants asked local whaling captains for permission to use their ice trails and work to improve them.
We tried to behave as if we were neighbors with the folks who depend on the ice for subsistence.
Organizers say they hope the workshop, which was funded by the National Science Foundation, inspires scientists and indigenous experts to continue to exchange their knowledge in the future. In Anchorage, I am Alona Nijden.
And former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin was in a second trial this week for her libel case against the New York Times. And for the second time, a jury found that she was not libeled by the publication. KUAC's Robin reports.
This trial started last Monday, the 14th. The jury deliberated for 2 hours yesterday to reach their verdict. Palin first sued The Times in 2017 after the newspaper published an opinion piece called America's Lethal Politics after the shooting at a baseball practice that injured Congressman Steve Scalise. The article referenced a map Palin's Political Action Committee had published in 2010. That graphic showed crosshairs on 20 Democrats and congressional districts that Palin's PAC targeted for the November 2010 elections. One of those targeted was Arizona Democrat Gabrielle Giffords, who was shot and critically injured on January 8, 2011. Six others were killed. In the 2017 opinion piece, the Times editorial board said there was a clear link between Palin's rhetoric using shooting metaphors and the violence. The Times editorial page editor testified in the first trial in 2022 that he added language about there being a clear link, and that once he realized his error, he worked to quickly issue a correction, which was posted 14 hours after the original. Palin testified in the first trial that she felt the editorial, quote, links me to inciting the murder of innocent people, unquote, and greatly damaged her reputation. The 2022 trial ended in a unanimous jury verdict for The Times, but Palin appealed, and the Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Manhattan found there was exclusion of evidence and a wrong instruction to the jury, so they sent the case back to district court for this second trial. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
And you're listening to KTOO. Thank you so much for listening.